Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Your Ben Jarofsky Show for this Tuesday, March 12th starts now. On today's show, Ben welcomes back CTU President Stacy Davis Gates. The Ben Jarofsky Show, a presentation of the Chicago Reader. ChicagoReader.com for everything that there is to know about the city of Chicago. You want to know what to do, where to go, what to eat, what to drink, what's happening in news. You want to know the arts world. You want to know politics in Chicago. Just head to ChicagoReader.com because there's all that stuff there and a whole lot more Chicago for you. And if you want more Ben Jarofsky, head to ChicagoReader.com/Jarofsky. That's J-O-R-A, V as in victory, S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Raccoon's Burke Tuesday, and here's why. Fascinating story in today's Chicago Sun-Times. I guess it was also ran in WBEZ because it's written by Ace WBEZ reporter Dave McKinney and Sun-Times federal court reporter John Seidel. Shout out to Dave and John. This excellent story. This is one of those stories like should be taught in a civics. Stacy Davis Gates is waiting. She's a former history teacher, now head of Chicago Teachers Union. So this is the kind of story that would really be challenging. I just think about this as popped into my head when I saw Stacy's image there. This would really be a challenging and difficult story for a civics teacher in Chicago to have to teach, actually a civics teacher anywhere in the state of Illinois, really, but to have to teach this story. So let me just try to boil it down, ladies and gentlemen. This story is about how the Supreme Court could not act on the proposal to suspend former Alderman Ed Burke's law license. They couldn't get enough judges to vote on that. Four of the judges, at least, had to recuse themselves. And you recuse yourself in a case when there's some kind of conflict of interest that prevents you from deciding on the case. So the first question you would have to examine if you're in a civics class in Chicago or in Illinois, which is, why are we judges recusing themselves from cases for alleged conflict of interest, but Clarence Thomas is not, with the Supreme Court and his wife and insurrection? That would be the first challenging issue. Like, why isn't this a consistent thing? Why are there inconsistencies in the interpretation? And then you would have to teach children that life is not fair, that not everybody plays by the same rules. There's just an inconsistent judging or refereeing of what is and isn't real. And you got to get it. So really, life is all about who controls the rules. Wow, man, that'd be hard to teach at anywhere, but particularly in a high school civics class. The story goes on to say that the Supremes did not specify why they felt they could not vote on this matter, but that four of them had sat on the bench with Ann Burke. Ann Burke is a former Supreme Court justice who is Ed Burke's wife. Now, I'm like, how is that a conflict of interest? I truly do not understand why it's a conflict of interest. Because you sat on the same bench with Ann Burke, you can't participate on whether her husband deserves a pension after he's been convicted of fraud. And the fraud was connected to his law practice. He was a property tax appeals lawyer. So he was convicted of shaking down people who came before the city looking for zoning changes or contracts, TIF contracts, and demanding that they, in exchange for his approval, they hire his property tax appeal. So it's directly related to his law business. I think it's a slam dunk for suspending the law license. I do not understand the conflict. If you sat on the bench with Ann Burke, this doesn't, so what? The real conflict, if you think about it, if you have a conflict because you sit on the bench with Ann Burke, then you can't weigh in on any matters dealing with Ed Burke. So when those days when his cases became before the Supreme Court, they all should have recused themselves. This is a case of, like, how do you put it? What's that saying? I'm not from a farm, but you close the gate to the barn after the cow has left the barn. I know I screwed that up, but Stacey, in my defense, I ain't never been on a farm. I don't know if it's the gate or the barn door. But, you know, it's like you're trying to change things after what you're trying to change has already occurred. So really, what difference does it make? This is such fake reform, ladies and gentlemen. I'm just saying, now I'm really going off. This is so classic Illinois Chicago. Fake reform. It's not real reform. Real reform is when you wouldn't let Ed Burke be the finance chair while he had a property tax business. How many years did he get to be the chair while having a property tax business? How many mayors looked the other way? Say what you will about Lori Lightfoot, Stacey Davis Gates. You got to give her credit for this. She got rid of Ed Burke at finance chair, and I will always appreciate that. And I think you do too, somewhere in the bottom of your heart. All right, that's my take on that. Fake reform in Illinois. Thank you, Dave McKinney and Seidel, John Seidel, for that article. Do not understand why four judges recuse themselves. Come on, judges, get your act together.
Why judges recuse themselves? You know the answer to that question. It's called machine. That's why it's laughable when these novice political reporters call CTU a machine. Because, see, that is machine. You see how thorough, dimensional, how untouchable that guy is inside of the machinery that is generation strong? That's the difference between movement and machine, is that a movement doesn't have that type of infrastructure, or it just doesn't have that infrastructure. And so calling our union a political machine is like an F paper, because it, like, neglects all of the dimensions that you just laid out there and how it was formed. His wife was a Supreme Court justice. Sure, CTU is a machine running from pillar to post, organizing and calling truth to power. That's machine there, sir. What you describe, how you describe it, the way in which it continues to operate, even with a felony conviction, that, sir, is machine.
Okay. All right. Wow. You jumped right into where we were going to go, and thank you for that. The whole issue of machine versus movement. This one, Stacey, let me think exactly what I want to say about this. Mm-hmm. The word machine is used in the city of Chicago now is so far removed from what the machine was that it's lost all meaning. It's sort of like the word reform, which is a completely useless and worthless word in the context of the city of Chicago, state of Illinois. Because reform, generally, the way it's used now, it means taking something from somebody that you don't like and giving to yourself. Like, they call it pension reform. So rich people for pension reform, because they don't want their taxes money going to retirees. So they want to keep that. They want to keep that money. So they call it reform. It dresses it up nicely. Machine, everybody's complaining about, like, they say, yes, the teachers union is a new machine. Everybody wants to run against the machine. Nobody wants to build the machine. How is Rauner was always running against
the machine? No one wants to practice democracy, man. No one wants to practice democracy. It's easier to talk machine, because practicing democracy is really tough. And that's what we do in our movement, the one that we participate in. We practice democracy, which means that you have to have a theory, which means that you have to have some values and principles, and you have to win the debate within the movement. Popular Chicago political narrative has yet to catch up to what politics are beginning, emphasis on beginning, to look like today. That's why everything either feels chaotic or incomplete in that analysis. They want you to believe that I'm leading the machine. I can't even lead three of my kids into the car every morning on time. it is just a very lazy and oft used phrase that people have a difficult time letting go of in politics as it relates to Chicago. If we believe that those who are winning more, not everything, just more, if you believe that they are a part of the political arena, then you have to talk about the parts of the political arena. And then you have to be curious about the parts of the political arena. And that's going to take more time than just slapping an erroneous label onto something. It's going to take inquiry. It's going to take study. It's going to take observation and experience. And I haven't seen any legacy media outlet committed to doing that yet.
All right. So let's break it down and get specific. In terms of the Chicago Teachers Union as machine, here's a specific question. Let's say I'm a teacher at the Billy Bob School, doesn't matter where, in the city of Chicago. And for whatever reason, I love Paul Vallis and cannot stand Brandon Johnson. Okay. All right. So would I lose my job with the Billy Bob School teaching fourth grade if I publicly went door to door? Knocking on door to door for Paul Vallis. That is, if it was a machine, you would lose your job. In the old days before Shackman, you had to go door to door for the Daily Machine, Richard J. Daily youngsters. You had to go door to door for the machine, knock on the door, or you would lose your job. If I, Ben, were Paul Vallis supporter and was in the election against Brandon Johnson, would I lose my job as a fourth grade teacher in Chicago for doing that? Yes or
no? No, because we don't control government. I can't fire you from a job that I can't give you. Remember, this is a labor union. We help to support, protect, right? Create new lanes, but we don't hire and fire. We create the means in which one is, you know, disciplined, in which they're fired. We have a hand in that. We don't create the process ourselves. Again, that's why there's misapplication there. You can't fire a teacher at a elementary school. Like, that's not our authority here.
All right. So let me give you another. Let's say it's a board of delegates. I've actually been to a CTU board of delegates meeting, not in a long time.
I've been to one. I'm sorry. We're bigger than the board.
My bad, House. Excuse me. I apologize to all teachers everywhere. So House of Delegates, those meetings were a trip back in the day. So I can answer this question, but I'm asking anyways. Let's say I take it one step further and I show up at that House of Delegates meeting with my big I love Paul Vallis button on. And I get up and go, I love Paul Vallis. Would I be kicked out of the union?
No, you would move to take a vote and then you would lose the vote. Because there are people. Listen, Paul Vallis didn't lie when he said he had friends at the union. Like, that's why Karen's leadership is so legendary and often dismissed. Karen had to lead a revolution of democracy within her union first. Like, what you see an impact with popular Chicago is one thing. And people often talk about that a lot. The part in which we don't give, you know, a lot of sunlight to is that Karen had to create the union that was able to create and reshape and transform parts of popular Chicago life. So in doing so, she had to open it up even to those who oppose common good bargaining, even to those who oppose progressive candidates, even to those who push back on the union doing work that isn't exclusively about wages and benefits. Karen had to win the argument with the members of our union, and she won that argument. Our leadership team, Jesse Sharkey, won that argument. And quite frankly, every election that we have within our union, that is a feature of it. What type of union do you want to support, promote, be a part of, organize with? And our members have answered that question with Karen, what was it, 2010, with Jesse, and then with me. So we continue to have that debate. That's not a one and done. That's what I'm saying. Movement is democracy, especially the movement that we're a part of. Here's the other thing, if I might. This is also a labor union that elects Black female leadership, bold Black female leadership that speaks very explicitly about their love for Black people and Black children and Black Chicago, too. There are very few, if any, institutions that have done that multiple times in the history of their institutions. The way in which we are being parroted by the right wing is because of those things. You have a union that chooses unapologetic Black female leadership, a membership that ain't all Black, right? We're a Black-led organization because I'm Black, and the members who vote for me aren't. Think about how revolutionary that is. The Chicago Tribune wants people to believe that people who live in Chicago and pay taxes will not pay for the education of Black children in this city. That is what the Chicago Tribune wants its readers to believe. What I know is that I have a membership whose zip codes are within the city because we have to live in the city to work in CPS. And they vote for people like me to carry a collective bargaining agenda that represents the eradication of anti-Blackness and the liberation of Black people, along with smaller class sizes, along with housing unhoused families, along with a better school day that includes a prep period for elementary school teachers. Like, I get to do all of that. Think about how revolutionary that is in Chicago and in larger America.
Particularly for Chicago. All right. Let's get to the other point you made in passing at the outset, and then we'll move on to other matters. You alluded to the fact that in so much of the coverage of City Hall, you are depicted as the controller of Brandon Johnson. And like as though he runs every decision by you. And I find that amusing. Because there's a lot of decisions that Brandon Johnson has made as mayor of the city of Chicago that I personally, not putting words in your mouth, Stacey Davis Gates, I personally am opposed. Give you an example. NASCAR. He's bringing NASCAR back. Was a dumb idea to bring it here, and it's an even dumber idea to bring it back. What they don't say, so when they'll talk about, like, bring Chicago home, they go, he ran it by Stacey Davis Gates. He was playing to his base. So, Did he run NASCAR by you? If he runs everything by you, did he go, hey, Stace, what's going on today? What about this NASCAR thing? What do you think? I mean, did he run the dumb ones by you too?
You know what? If people heard the conversations that I had with the mayor of Chicago, they would really think we were boring. Like, our children are basically the same age. My son and his development without me like killing him is a part of understanding what boys that age do a year before he does it, right? Brandon's oldest is like a year older than my oldest. And so I get the benefit of all of their chaos or stress or growing pains before I go through them with my son. So quite frankly, a lot of my parenting skills actually come from the mayor, you know, and the way in which I have encountered parenting a boy. Look, I don't know what to tell people. you know, we're friends. I mean, it's really that simple. He's my friend. And our families are friends, our children have relationships, and that's just the extent of it. I don't know how people can create a different type of thought process. Look, what Stacey Davis Gates thinks about politics, you already know that. Like, I come on here and talk about it once a month. I go to the city club sometimes and do it. I, you know, the union has e-blasts, you know, I have meetings, I go and do stuff where these values are expressed. So those aren't secrets. And quite frankly, they voted for Brandon. And so this idea is really rooted in something that I think is supposed to be scary. Like, I think that the laziness of opposition politics is racist and sexist, right? Is that it plays to the lowest common denominator of what they believe people interact with. But I actually think it's a little different. And I don't think that those are the politics of right now. I think that my age group, and we're getting older, we've had a multicultural experience, right? We've gone to schools, either, you know, elementary or high school or post-secondary, and we've had to have interactions. Again, my generation was basically weaned on hip-hop. And hip-hop, if nothing else, has given popular mainstream America an opportunity to inquire about Black popular urban life. So while there is still a lot of anti-Blackness, while white supremacy is still the king, right? While patriarchy still is coursing through every institution we have, our ability to have spaces in which to understand people has changed significantly over time. This idea that girls and boys can't be colleagues and friends, I mean, it's wrong. It's just not like of this generation and younger ones, quite frankly. This idea that Black people can't lead in executive spaces, well, that too is being undermined by all of the Black people that are leading in executive spaces. So I'm more hopeful about our future because these walls of separation are being challenged. They're being knocked down, to be perfectly honest with you. My children will not understand a segregated life. They will not understand a segregated experience. They will have a multitude of experiences because of where they go to school, what sports they play, what activities they participate in, the ways in which they engage with social media and the quote virtual world. Right. My son plays FIFA with people from all over the world. Like we are really the people who get to editorialize should retire because their way of like interpreting the world is really becoming more and more of a dinosaur every day. Does that make sense?
Well, I'd like to follow up on that. It doesn't want me to retire, ladies and gentlemen. I never stop editorializing.
I mean, the actual people on editorial board.
Editorial, okay. Yeah. There's so much I want to respond to, but I like we'd go down a path. Like if they talk about segregation in America today, it still exists. It's just different, obviously, than when you were a kid, and it's way different than when I was a kid. I'm a lot older than Stacy. But I don't want to have that conversation right now. That's a great conversation for another time. I want to get at something that you sent to me in a text message this morning, if I may. So before I bring a guest on a show, particularly a longstanding guest, I got this thing where I go, what's on your mind? Stacey knows this because she's been dealing with me for a long time. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? I always say that to a guest because I'll talk about anything, Stacey. I could do an hour on segregation if you want. So I go, what's on your mind? Anything in particular you want to discuss? How many times have I asked you that question, Stacey Davis Gates, over the last...
Every time we do this.
Every guest gets it, too. Not just every guest. What do you want to talk about? And this is, if I may, what you responded. And so then I'm just going to say, all right, speak your mind. All right, here we go. Anything in particular you want to discuss? Yes. Right wing. The right wing captivating mainstream media, the danger of it. When did IPI become reputable? I'm not quite sure it is reputable, but what? Neither here nor there. What do you mean by the right-wing captivating mainstream media and the danger of it? Go.
Well, it has to be reputable, right? Because like yesterday I get a text message about, you know, somebody saying that a nonpartisan voter event that folks are engaged with allies, the IPI was going after it, and that a news outlet that, you know, that a news outlet, you know, was calling to ask about it. So I look at, you know, the information, I Google the news outlet, and I go, oh, that's just the right wing, right? Because they bought a lot of space, a lot of media space, right? They have different spinoffs of the same thing. And so, you know, you can kind of go down a rabbit hole. So I just like dismissed it. Of course, IPI would have their cousin on their mama's side write a story about CTU. That's like what they're invested in. That makes sense, right? If that's what they're invested in. So I dismissed it. And then we started getting these hits from mainstream. Like, oh my God, there's something here that's wrong. And I go, and I was just like, is this for real happening? Like the Illinois Policy Institute, their entire profile right now is a cartoon of like the Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote, right? Or Tom and Jerry. They are trying to cast us as their Tom or Jerry, as their Roadrunner or Wile E. Coyote. Like this cartoon of this back and forth between two cartoon characters. Now, we certainly haven't signed up to do that because we have real work to do, you know, at the Chicago Teachers Union. That said, though, if you even Google them, you can see that Paul Vallis has a very cushy job there. You can see that Bruce Rauner, you know, was an original bankroller of the institution. So you can see politics oozing out of its, like, origin story. And then you have all of these like legacy media spaces asking us a question that they get from an Illinois Policy Institute hit. Now, does Breitbart, is that how you say that? Breitbart?
Good enough, doesn't matter.
Now, does he provide the instigation of stories in legacy media? In Chicago, or in CNN, or MSNBC, or on the Today Show, or Good Morning America? Because if that is the case, then we are in trouble. If we are taking a very craven political organization that deals exclusively with wealthy donors and what they believe should happen, and make them reputable in the way that drives media. Now, people will say, well, Stacey, you belong to an interest organization and you want people to report on the stuff that you all do. And I go, yeah, but think about it like this. There are like 30,000 people who belong to this organization that are situated in the city with their family. That is quite different than a small group of people with a lot of money right, moving messages and policies through a very narrow lens. Again, going back to the democracy, that's what is not talked about enough. I don't get to just say what Stacey wants to say. We pass resolutions that create the voice and the direction of this union. We have debates that refine and clarify purpose and practice. These are things that we engage on before we're doing it. And quite frankly, sometimes while we're doing it, we revisit, we reflect, and maybe we retool and rewrite. But it's a very different political space that we're being oriented to. And I would say that our legacy media and their ability to grapple with the inconsistencies and the contradictions and the outright disinformation machine that is the right wing is going to contribute to how this doesn't work well. And what I will say is that's probably why the workers at the Tribune were on strike, is because the boss is marginalizing the staff, making it less easy for them to engage at a dimensional level in our society to provide the type of, you know, appropriate reporting that enables its readers to come to some conclusion. So they're on strike because they say they don't have enough people to do this work. They say that they don't have the agency in which to operate, because agency is born out of capacity. That's where agency is born. I don't get to have a voice if I don't have enough time to get to that voice. So this idea of what's happening and how legacy media is behind it, and how the strikes of the reporters who are the guild that's going on strike, and how that's connected, is very, very interesting. I actually am very ashamed by the press inquiries we've gotten as a result of like a very naked, narrow political hit from right-wing demagogue. It was embarrassing to have to even address it, to be perfectly honest with you. Very embarrassing.
Why do you say you were ashamed?
Well, because I don't think people understand what we do here at this union. We're a union of educators. Think about it. Like we talk about me being a history teacher, but I'm a civics teacher. I teach civics. The reason why I study this stuff, the reason why you and I get to have the conversations we have, is because I have the basic understanding of like government and the political system that we exist in, and then the larger systems around the world. I have a basic understanding of that, right? Which is why I know that this country is supposed to have a peaceful transfer of power. Right, because I understand the basics. What we saw on January 6th is people who did not have the basics, which is why it's easy for Donald Trump to say all of the crazy, ridiculous stuff he's saying, because we don't reflect the basics popularly in our education system. And so our civics teachers partner with organizations like Chicago Votes and the MCVA Challenge and Good Kids Mad City. They partner with these people to create space for their students to understand the system, not who to vote for, but the system and why one would vote, why one would engage civically, the point of it, right? And they're doing it in a system that represents children of color, right? So nonpartisan, let me tell you what this stuff is all about. Now, think about that in the context of the right wing. What do? They suppress votes. They lie about everything. They try to overthrow the government. And they elect rapists to the highest level of government in our country. So, of course, they would take something as innocuous as a learning opportunity and make it something that it isn't. What I'm disappointed in as a teacher is that there are reporters taking their complaint seriously under the circumstances that I've just laid out. You cannot divorce what is happening at the national level with the lack of civic participation and voter literacy. Couple that with the assault that the right wing is doing on voting rights and to whom they're doing it, with what the IPI did yesterday.
Okay, so I missed the coverage of this, but I did see, I forget, someone sent it to me.
Yeah, you're a thinking person.
And
I would have missed it.
No, but I forget how I connected to it, but I did somehow, and they were upset, or they were highlighting a letter that Jackson Potter wrote to teachers, asking them if to bring kids to a rally regarding Bring Chicago Home. That's my memory of this. And the rallies
are wrong. See, that's another perspective. And see, and that's what I'm saying. It's like everyone wants this machine narrative so they won't read because they're already bought into an erroneous conclusion. So like if the conclusion is always CTU is a machine, then of course this is another example of the machinery. Instead of reading it, like literally reading it, then rereading it if comprehension is not your thing and figuring out something else to write, because that's not a story. That's just another example of the right wing suppressing the voter literacy and the ability of Black folks and brown folks to participate in popular elections.
All right. So put yourself in the shoes of a Chicago reporter. Let's say for a newspaper with
you. You know, I really wanted to be a reporter one time in my life, so this is going to be fun.
Okay, this will be fun. 3 years of being a reporter would have cured you of that. All right. So put yourself in their shoes. And let's say that, yes, they are a member of a union. And furthermore, they had a strike. That's the, at least the Tribune one day. What a horrible boss they have, by the way. And so they had felt compelled to exercise their collective bargaining rights, which we still have in the state of Illinois, no thanks to the Illinois Policy Institute, Bruce Rauner, and that gang. Let's just think about that, folks. And so they formed a union. Now they're dealing with the way the right plays the press. It's one of my favorite topics. With the right, like you're a basketball junkie, you know what I'm talking about. So whenever LeBron cries about some foul that he thinks was wrongly committed, the coach complained to the ref vigorously, and then they get the makeup call. So the right's been crying about the bias in reporting the mainstream. That's their biggest sob story they got going. And so reporters are responding. You're a reporter, Stacey. You want to prove to the right that you're not biased, even though you're in a union and you pay union dues and you just went on strike. But you want to prove to the right that, like, you call just balls and strikes. So you're just going to not be biased. And so the Illinois Policy cooks up this story. Yeah. So what do you do? Your editor says, hey, Davis Gates, go call up the head of the union and see what they have to say about this outrage that Illinois Policy Institute cooked up. What do you do, reporter Stacey Davis Gates? Do you say, no, that's you being exercised, that's you being manipulated and exploited by the right wing playing to the refs, boss, and you can't see it? Or do you say, yes, boss, and make the call? Go.
Ooh, that's a good question. I like this. I think I would, like, if it's me, I'm going to go back and forth with my boss a bit. I mean, that's why I, like, am a union leader, because I actually don't think that the boss is right. And so I would push back on it. I'm like, yo, I read this seems, and this is because, and I'm not sure this is a story. And, you know, let's play it. The boss says, do it anyway, right? Because that's what bosses do, make bad decisions. And so I say, okay, I'll do it anyway. But because I'm still who I am, he didn't say, because it's got to be a guy, right? He didn't say, getting it wrong is the point. So it's got to be a guy. So he didn't say how to write the story, just write the story. So then I find my opportunity there and the perspective. So let me ask, why is this a thing, right? Why did the IPI write about this? So let me do some research about IPI. Oh, research, not just the press release, not just the narrow Twitter thread, but actual Google, which research in 2024 is a lot easier than it was even in 1995, I might add. That being said, like if you do some just like some basic Google level research, dude, they have a whole website like dedicated to the slander of the union, our movement, and the people who participated in it. Like, it's like giving Lex Luthor the leg up on a story on Superman.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's ridiculous at the most basic level. And so that's what's disappointing, because I think that we are literally fighting for everything that helps us to maintain this democracy. And now we're seeing it trickle down to the very local level. Remember Malcolm X, again, history teacher. Remember Malcolm X said that the newspaper, the media, the legacy media will have you thinking that your enemy is your friend and your friend is your enemy. That's what he said. That is one of the most oft-quoted words of wisdom Brother Malcolm, you know, put forth, you know, during his leadership. And you see it very transparently now, especially with the reporting. We just do not have the level of discernment, research, and dimensional thinking that we need. I also have to think it's because our newsrooms are not as diverse as the society it's covering. And it does make a difference, just like it does in labor, just like it does in a school community. Who's doing the work matters.
Man, that was a great riff. There's a baked in bias. Now I'm going to go on my high horse. There is a baked in bias, and I'll show you the baked in bias. So the joke I make is there a statute of limitations on reporters mentioning that Brandon Johnson worked for the Chicago Teachers Union?
Come on. Like, how many times did we hear that Rahm Emanuel made like millions fleecing poor folks out of their savings?
Yeah. So, okay. So that was a word you read my mind. So Rahm and Rotter were pals. They had wine together. You know, any Illinois policy, if they want to be consistent, if they want to be apply by their same rules to everybody, will point out, and the Tribune should do the same, the Sun-Times, WBEZ, absolutely every media. If you're going to mention that Brandon Johnson used to be a paid employee of the Chicago Teachers Union, then you must mention in every article in which Rahm Emanuel and Bruce Rauner are in any way connected that they did a business deal together. And they made lots of money, and they were pals, and then went on a wine drinking vacation together. I mean, not to mention one, and to mention the other shows a bias.
Well, yes, and here's the other thing: I think that even my movement has grown too tolerant of that bias. Like we just consider it. Like I remember when I was a kid, and we played basketball. And, you know, our team was sometimes more Black than other teams. And so our coaches would tell us to prepare for bias in the officiating of the game because we had experienced bias before, because our coaches had experienced bias when they were coaches. So they trained us to tolerate it, so we could focus on beating everyone, right? And so sometimes the double edge of that is that you tolerate it because you know it's there, and so you just keep it moving. And I think that too is a problem. That is a problem. Think about it. I'm going to tolerate unfair treatment.
Listen, the bias is on display every day these days with the Bears and the White Sox looking for a stadium. And then you have something like aid to migrants or a teacher's contract, the one you talked about before, the City Club. So the page, they're just giddy with expectations about the Bears and the White Sox getting a deal and building a stadium. And the glorious photos and renderings of how beautiful these ballparks will be. No one talks about how much it's going to cost.
Legacy, Brandon Johnson's legacy in Chicago with the legacy media will probably be about the Bears and the White Sox. It won't be about public education or the expansion of, you know, the public good. It would be about something like that. That's what I'm saying. Like the imbalance, the bias, the lack of dimension, it like as a thinking person, is really pathetic.
I just wrote about it. Cranes did an editorial about last week, I think it was, pointing out the mayor, you've had trouble here, you've had trouble there, you've had trouble here. Here's how you could change it. Give a handout to the Bears. I'm not making this up. Give a handout to the Bears.
They give you their roadmap. That's why I'm saying that people act as if altruism can only exist for them and what they need from government. So the right wing says that government should not be giving out handouts, and that if you work hard and you build businesses, then those businesses should be the beneficiary of government support. Do I have that right? Right? Now, if you don't work hard, you don't do anything, you can't get any help. It seems to me that those who can't, like emphasis on can't, for a variety or for whatever reason, those are people who do need help. Now, I didn't say that the people who have these businesses don't need help. I didn't make it an either or, because I actually believe there are some instances where government has to accommodate the fullness of its sectors if that is what the government is supposed to do. If that is how the people have situated the government, if the democracy says as much. See, believing in democracy is not like deliberately marginalizing another sector's ability to get the attention and the support and resources of government. That's not democracy. Democracy is having a debate about those sectors, what they deserve, winning that debate, and then allowing the government to accommodate the decisions that come from that debate.
Listen, people don't, they say they want democracy, but I don't see it. And I'll give you some examples. Bring Chicago home ordinance, all right? It's going to come before the voters. You win or you lose. It's a straight up democracy. Real estate lobby doesn't like it. They go to court. They find some judge to kick it off the ballot. There, so-called, there goes democracy out the window. No democracy.
Actually, I'm going to test that. That's not, the democracy allows for the courts to have a role in the way democracy is arbitrated in our society. It does. And its role, what the real estate lobby was asking for is for them to have a voice outside of its role. But the judicial system is there to serve as a check and a balance. And we should always use it. And I say that because you get Brown v. the Board of Education out of that. So I'm not saying that bad actors can't manipulate the process. And we have a process.
Okay.
The problem is when, you know, people like us, the workers, begin to have a process that benefits us. Look at what Starbucks just capitulated to, the workers.
All right. So it's interesting how judges pick and choose when they want to have a role in democracy. So the judge here in Chicago says, I want to have a role in democracy. I'll kick this question off the ballot, cooking up some reason that nobody can understand because there really is no reason. And meanwhile, the Supremes are not going to are going to let Trump stay on the ballot, even though he's an insurrectionist. Well, it's not up to us. It's up to the legislators. So here's more fodder for your civics class, Stacey. The inconsistencies embedded here. I'll give you another example here, and love to get your thoughts on this. So the Bears are now concentrating on the lakefront to build their stadium. They're going to look for a handout, probably a TIF. And they're going to put a lot of pressure they got a lot of allies, and they're going to put that pressure to get Mayor Johnson to bend and get Governor Pritzker and all the legislators to bend because it's in the best interest of people, city of Chicago, state of Illinois, to put it there. Meanwhile, Arlington Heights, their school board elected, told the Bears, we're going to limit the amount of money in tax handouts you get. We're going to fight you on this. And guess what? The Bears blinked, Stacey. So they got democracy in Arlington Heights. I don't know what we have in the city of Chicago.
Well, until we have an elected school board, you know.
Do you believe an elected school board in the city of Chicago would stand up to the Chicago Bears?
I don't know, but that's democracy we would see. See, that's the thing. Like, with this, you also, first off, the Bears and the White Sox live in this same democracy, and they have a right to put forth an idea about how it, whatever it is supposed to work. So are we. The disparity in our experiences in this democracy deal with the bias that's reflected in legacy media. It deals with, you know, corporations being treated as people in the electoral process, right? So the deck is stacked, you know, and, you know, in a space in which has what feels like unlimited resources. Now, our side is often leveraged with the same amount of power, right, by legacy media, by, you know, political watchers. It's ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous. That's why our newsrooms have got to get better. That's why the political literacy has to increase. Because if you believe that Donald Trump is the working class hero as a billionaire, the capacity, you ain't even thinking about capacity now. You're not even thinking, you want to know how you got to a world where a billionaire is a working class hero. It's insane, but that's where we are. So that's why I'm saying this. Like, you really got to call time out, hit pause, whatever the thing is, to create assessment. And the assessment is that how is it with the level of sophistication that is being taught in our classrooms everywhere in this world? How is it that with the accessibility of information that there are people in our society that can believe that Donald Trump is a working class hero? There has got to be a mechanism in which they are getting that image, getting those words, that has failed to provide the professional discernment that they have. Our legacy media has fallen down on Donald Trump severely. And because it has been such a severe fail, there is a lack of clarity of how to reset it. Donald Trump as the working class hero is not because of political mail. It is not because of political commercials. It is because of this coverage that goes without real critical inquiry.
Wow. Hey, you remember a conversation we had? It was off mic. We had finished the show. And I think Jeanette was on the show. It was you, me, and Jeanette sitting around the old days when I had a studio.
I remember that. Yeah,
remember that conversation?
Yep.
And it was really, I wish we had that on the mic. But we were talking about black men voting Republican. And I believe that's, I was going off as I do, that this is a myth that's put up by the right wing. This is classic me. Stacey, this is a myth. They put that out there every 4 years to like bamboozle the voters, et cetera, and so forth. And we got into that conversation. I watch it now. I see it. And now they got fake pictures of black people with Donald Trump.
AI.
Yeah.
Like, and people know it is. And like, there is an irresponsibility of covering someone who refuses to tell the truth and treating them like they are honest brokers and providing good faith argumentation. That's irresponsible. Donald Trump lies and traffics in bad faith arguments. And you cannot cover him like you cover people who do the opposite of that.
And do you think that also goes to someone like Paul Vallis and IPI?
Absolutely. But it's endemic. It's not just Trump or Vallis. It's not just IPI. It's the entire system that allows for a lie to be made into the truth. And that's what's happening.
If anybody wants to read about IPI, I urge you, go read McDumkey's, my dear friend McDumkey's coverage of it. That is one of the most honest, painstaking reporters in the city of Chicago. Took the deep dive, spent weeks of his life going through lots of documents, connecting a lot of dots.
And he's now leading the investigative coverage of the Chicago Sun-Times, right?
No, Block Club.
The Chicago Tribune, right?
No. No, I get what you're doing.
ABC Channel 752, right? Oh, Block Club. See what I'm saying? Legacy media. That's my point. Like, there's no investment in that type of reporting.
Yeah. By the way, I was one step behind Stacey there. I was going, no, Stacey, you made a mistake. And Stacey was like, Ben, I have a point here I'm making. All right. As the Ben Jarofsky Show's designated reader of IPI, I got to ask you a question. So good friend of the show, Greg Pratt, tweeted out something the other day that I wouldn't have known. And I'm not even quite sure. Oh, no, somebody said it to me. I love you, listeners. You send me tweets because you know I don't read Twitter. I'm just curious if IPI reported this. Okay, here. So this is from, I am now reading the tweet from Gregory Royal Pratt, who is ace reporter for the Chicago Tribune, and also a leader in that union that you mentioned before, and the author of a book about Mayor Lori Lightfoot, and he'll be coming on the show soon to talk about that. Here we go. Quote, Paul Vallis is now heading a new with Juan Rangel as treasurer. So a candidate who's suing a former close aide over hundreds of thousands of dollars in the last committee is teaming with someone banned from bond offerings by SEC to raise political dollars. And then there's a link to the statement of organization. Greg Pratt, shout out to you. Very clever tweet. I got to give you a lot of credit, condensing a lot of information in a very small space. You're pretty good at that stuff. My question to you, Stacey Davis-Gates, as the Ben Jarofsky Show's correspondent covering IPI, did IPI report on that?
Paul works for IPI.
Oh, I see. Hey, IPI, get working, man.
I mean, do you see the coordinated effort here? I mean, Paul Vallis works for IPI. And now he and Juan have a charter school now. And then he was working for the school voucher movement as well. All of them are getting together to destroy the Chicago public schools. Because that's effectively what it is. They want to both privatize it and allow people to take money out of it and give to private institutions. I mean, they're clear about who they are and what they want. What's not clear is why legacy media won't report that part. Like, Paul is not, like, hiding you know, he's telling you what he believes in. Legacy Media wanted him to be a Democrat. Paul was very clearly a Republican.
Man, that was pathetic.
But so again, they are who they are, from the tweets to the jobs to the statements to everything that makes up their person and their experience. It is clear. And yet, he was given a platform as if he was a serious politician with a good track record.
All right. No sense in going over that. Listen, the next time you, since you have so much control over Brandon, put in the good word for me. I don't know about that Bears stadium. All right. Just put that good word in for me. Which is nice since you have so much control over Brandon, allegedly.
Well, I hear he's come on your talk show and did like your in-person thing with you. You might have a better in with him than me.
Now, all right.
Might be known as one of the reporters who told the stories that made it possible for the movement to be understood by the electorate. You might have more influence. You know what? You might have bias. That's probably what they tell you, right?
I openly acknowledge my bias.
Except for you are a columnist and we read you for your bias. See the difference?
I openly have my bias. I had my bias was in full display when the teachers went on strike in 2012. I wrote a whole thing about it.
One of the few people who did write in that way. You know what's funny, Ben? Can I just give me a moment here? This whole discussion of elected school board in Chicago that originated in the Senate chamber. This is another situation where it is amazing to me how short the memories are of even the people who write the editorials for the Sun-Times and the Tribune. So both the Sun-Times and the Tribune said, give them 21 in November. We need an elected school board now. Not 2 years ago, they both said, no elected school board. Like, I literally went back and screenshot their editorials, plural, because they've been saying no to a school board for a very long time. Begrudgingly said, if it's going to be a hybrid, it's good that there's still some mayoral control. Literally wrote that. And so now when Brandon Johnson becomes mayor of Chicago, because that's the only change that's happened in between the last set of editorials and this new set of editorials, is that Brandon Johnson is mayor of Chicago. So now it's different. But they never explain why. They all behave as if it's about democracy. Now, when did democracy change from the last set of editorials to the newest set of editorials? And they want to call us a hypocrite.
Well,
they
want to, because you changed too.
No, we didn't change. And let me tell you what this is. Because here's the thing. There is one thing that I personally have worked on every day since I started working at this union, and it's an elected school board. There is no way in the world that there is anyone who has worked on this has more credibility than me, than the people that I worked with. And I know who those people are, and none of them are leading the external discourse on it in the newspaper. And what I will say to that, Ben, is two things. One, I wish they stopped counting my money. I really do. Because the fact that they think that we're not ready to do the thing that we've been working on since forever is laughable, considering the things we've done so far. That's one. And two, here's the other thing. If you even understand the press coverage, their press coverage, we were forced into a compromise space. Once we were forced into that compromise space, let me tell you what they told us had to be done, that the city and the district had to create an understanding of how they were financially tied together and then they had to decouple. They said that, well, we can't start an entire new government, you know, with 21 brand new people at the same time, because starting a new government is going to be laborious. It takes time. So, okay, fine. We buy into your argument. Now, we really don't believe it, but it's like those two referees that I told you about. We begin to tolerate the system because we got to work in the system. All right, so we're going to beat your two referees too, right? And so then you begin to build the thing, right? You invest time in creating maps that represent the fullness of Chicago. You convene with the different entities that are working on this to figure it out. So you embark upon the things that they said that the General Assembly, said that you needed to in order to get to the next level. Mm-hmm. So we did that. And right as we were going to consolidate on a map, they said 21 people. And it's like 21 people. I thought we were here for a map, right? And I've worked in Springfield. And so it was odd to me that something this big, a new unit of government that was being created for the first time in Chicago, was being treated so irreverently, right? Gay marriage took multiple sessions, meetings, people, advocates, stakeholders. They knew what was going to happen, or roughly what was going to happen at every juncture, because it was an important piece of legislation. Death penalty, something similar. There has never been, in the history of my understanding of the General Assembly, something that is very important being treated so irreverently by any chamber in that building. It took up, we were on our heels because this was unlike anything that we had dealt with. So did we want the maximum 21? Absolutely, we wanted that. They told us it was too many, right? Did we want it to happen at the same time? Yes, but they told us having a board that did not have a memory of what it did previously so big would spell disaster. So of course CTU, of course COCO, of course Blocks Together, of course any number of community groups that have participated in that, we were told to do certain things. The bill we wanted had resident voting, right? That many of our immigrant families could participate in it. That's the bill we wanted too. Did he put that back in the bill when he put 21 and said, you know, right now in November? He didn't put that one back in there. So what I'm saying is that the way in which this was used politically and cynically in this moment speaks also to the lack of inquiry that we got from press.
Okay, so let me just tell you what I think about this, since you raised this at the tail end. I'm just going to say it. This goes back to what I began the show with, like just the notion that recusing yourself on Ed Burke after you put up with his conflict of interest all along, there's just something I shake my head about. So with this bill, let's say the absolute bottom line truth is this, that you didn't want Brandon Johnson to have to lose complete control over the school board over the last 2 years of his time in first term in office. I see nothing wrong with coming out and literally saying that.
But I don't believe that. See, that's not why. That's what I'm saying. That's not why. If we are a political machine, we don't want any school board. Let's redo all of it. If we a machine. That's not what I said. What I said was, why are you now saying this? That was the first question. What changed before to now? And the only thing that I can say is that we have a Mayor Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
And then number two, what happened to all of the things, all of the impediments to full and complete democracy that were there yesterday that seem to no longer matter. Mm-hmm. So decoupling the district from the city, that no longer matters?
Right? Yeah, no, yeah, go ahead.
You know, so all of these, it no longer matters for us to have like 10 people overlap the new 10 people that could potentially be elected, because you said that that also mattered, right? You said that this is a new unit of government and we got to go slow because, you know, we don't want to get it wrong. So that no longer matters either. Just so we're clear about all of the speed bumps, impediments that were put forth just 2 years ago about this very same piece of legislation have now changed dramatically since why?
Like, we have a new mayor. We have a new mayor.
Well, okay. So then we got to start talking about that and the fullness of its manifestations in the Illinois General Assembly and in the headlines and in every part of Chicago popular life, because we are all being impacted by it. And if we don't create language and space for it, we'll all think we're like living in some type of crazy chaos.
And I'm just telling you right now, one more time, these reporters are under pressure to bash the Chicago Teachers Union. I can't say it more clearly. They are under pressure to bash the Chicago Teachers. And some of them are more eager to do it than others. And it's a lot of things being played. Reporters, it's assumption that they're liberal, so they got to prove they're not too liberal. There's an assumption that they're pro-union because they're unions, so they got to prove they're not pro-union. They, their bosses, literally, the people who own the papers, are members of the groups that work against the Chicago Teachers Union. So that's a bias, an inherent bias that will always be there. You know what, Stacey, I'm hoping to see? Let's say we get elected school board. Chicago Teachers Union, despite all the talk about being a machine, is not going to elect every single member. Corporate Chicago is going to elect some members, and the charter union is going to have
democracy it. Democracy is going to work.
That's one way of looking at it, yes. I want to see how Corporate Chicago's school board members vote on that handout to the Bears. Because if it's a TIF deal, it's going to come before them. And the Board of Education for all these years has been a rubber stamp on every single dumb TIF deal. So, Stacey, I can't wait to see how that coverage goes down.
Well, I want to see how the coverage goes down about the mayor's new investment plan that weans the city off TIFs, creates a different way in which it engages with capital and invest inside the city. Because if it weans it off a TIF, then we'll see what billions of dollars going to schools now that should have already been going to them.
Okay, this is too late to raise that topic. That is at least an hour of me going off. So we'll just tease that for the next time Stacey comes on or anybody comes on. I have not taken the deep dive on that program.
Thinking about that a lot in my constellation of people is Kennedy Bartley. You may want to give Kennedy a call.
Well, I'll give Kennedy a call. We could talk about that all day. All right. I'm going to restrain myself. I am not going to go down that road right now because we've run out of time. So, Stacey, thank you very much. It's always a blast talking to you. I wish you could see her shirt, folks. She's wearing a super cool sweatshirt. She's letting everybody know where she stands today with her.
You said it.
You know, CTU to the core. All right, Stacey, thank you very much. And I also thank producer Chris. And I know Stacey agrees with me when I say, hey, producer Chris, give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. Peace and love, everybody.
And remember, stay updated on all things Chicago at chicagoreader.com. You can find Ben on Instagram at Benny J Show. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow The Ben Jarofsky Show on your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.